and welcome to Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. And I'm Mark.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Paul.
And in this episode, the new Coca-Cola brand positioning and the first TV campaign from it too. And another new brand positioning, this time from a bank, RBS. Plus, should brands be boycotting those media titles who were at the centre of the Caroline Flack scandal? Plus, new campaigns from Think, BHF and Teva. So first up this episode, we're talking about Coca-Cola because two things have happened. They've announced a new brand positioning, which doesn't happen every day, let's be honest. And to coincide with that, there's a new ad out there too. Who's seen it? What do you think?
So, I mean, I think it's interesting in the context of what they're trying to do in their brand positioning. And I guess we'll talk more about putting your money where your mouth is in terms of how far you're willing to go or how what you're really willing to stand up for, because I guess the ad is good, but it doesn't go all the way in taking a real stand on something, in my opinion.
Okay. Should we rewind and tell the listeners what it's all about?
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
So Coca-Cola obviously never far from our screens, but they're back. So this is a Europe-only brand platform and purpose, they're calling it, called Better When We're Open. They're describing it as an evolution of Uplift and Unite, which I had no idea was the case, but it's already an improvement, because Uplift and Unite, what does that mean? And also it's a build on their Christmas ad, which I completely missed. I don't know if you guys saw it.
No, I don't remember a Christmas ad this year. Well, I remember the Santa Claus is coming, Santa Claus is coming, Coca-Cola. Holidays are
coming. So the premise of the ad and I guess the platform is that we as humans should pause and see if we are in the wrong versus assuming everyone else is around us. And that's the kind of their shortcut. I think some of the quotes from the senior staff at Coca-Cola was that we're kind of more divided than ever, which I think is fair enough. I think I've talked about this before, like in the technology age, we are less connected in terms of real human connection. So there is a genuine push putting Coca-Cola in the heart of more social interactions, which I definitely support. But yeah, I think if you're being hypercritical, you could say purpose washing. I don't think it's the case here. I think a brand of this scale needs to be doing this sort of stuff. I think if you look at the ad and what I've read to date, and I haven't lived with it that long, I think it's done really well, like the tone and the kind of energy of the ad. I at the moment I feel quite positive about it.
As a side point, I thought it was interesting that it was an American ad for a Western European positioning, but whatever.
Made from London. Not shot in London, but made by London.
Wyden Kennedy.
London,
How interesting. I wonder why they decided to do that.
Well, so expensive travel.
Isn't Coca-Cola one of, if not the ultimate American brand?
And
so you kind of don't... it doesn't jar that it's an American style ad. Not to me. I mean, I know what you mean, and all the characters in it are American superhero. It ends with superheroes,
yeah.
Or the superheroes kind of woven through the ad, which are undoubtedly American as well. So no, I didn't think it needed to be British. In fact, it would be odd. Can you imagine a Coke ad? It's rather posh English people saying Coca-Cola.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right.
True. That's true.
Have a Coca-Cola and a smile.
Sorry, why can't you just admit that maybe sometimes I might be right?
Because you're not right.
No, I don't want to. You know what? No, it's fine.
This may be a bit of a media bubble kind of thought, but in the PR that you referred to, Paul, the Coke people were saying that they're not going to dive into the most controversial issues.
Yeah.
I think Brexit was mentioned as an example of the kind
and
of
Trump.
Thing they wouldn't get involved in, Trump being the other. You're absolutely right. And I just wondered if that is a bit naive, because I'm mindful of watching the Brits last week and how very, very strident the messaging was there and how it has resonated with the youth audience. So my hypothesis is that the youth of today, certainly in the United Kingdom, and I would think in most of Western Europe, which is where this ad is aimed, actually are very opinionated, and people and brands who come across with less than strident opinions are just wallpaper.
You know, if you asked yourself, could I be the one who's wrong? Maybe things would change for the better.
Well, rather than us talk about it, I thought I'd ask an expert, if that's okay. And last week, Coca-Cola's former Global Content Excellence Director, Guy Duncan, came into the Waxon office to give his opinion on Coke's latest brand positioning. And I first asked Guy if, by trying to skirt those controversial aspects of togetherness, Coke might be running the risk of not really connecting with their younger, and I would say, opinionated audience.
If you involve yourself in an issue, this is clearly political, and you fall one side of the fence or the other. So take Brexit, which could be a togetherness message. It could be about it's better to be collaborative and be in Europe and not forget our allies and be together. They could have sat with that camp and pissed off half the country. And I think they have to be super aware that this is for everybody. It doesn't matter what your opinion is, because Coke brings people together. And we respect everyone's opinion so long as it's based in politeness and not non-rudeness and legality and all those things that procurement worry about. But they try not to hack people off. But I would agree with, I think the spokesperson in one of the articles said they don't shy away from social issues. And I think one of the surprising things when I first joined Coke was how much social activity goes on behind the scenes at Coke. So much good is done by Coca-Cola with social causes in the background to these great big 90-second pieces of film that you forget that Coca-Cola, because the name is on the tin, it's the company speaking, and the company does care.
You touched on the fact that they try to appeal to everybody, and I just wonder if that kind of strategy is relevant in the 21st century.
Yeah, it's one of the great conundrums at Coke when you sit down, write a creative brief and debate with the marketing teams. Your target audience is everybody, and so suddenly you're sitting there with this creative brief that says, right, let's go for everybody. And, you know, football is everybody's sport. I mean, it doesn't discriminate in many ways, young, old, different races, different genders. Football, and that's why they go there. Same with the Olympics. Yes, you've got to like sport, and that's probably the only discriminator. People who hate watching football on a Sunday afternoon won't turn it on. But they do go for big universal themes, big universal social causes, big universal sports events, big universal... I mean, their music is relatively generic. It doesn't offend. And they comment in a neutral way. It skirts controversial issues. I think different countries will use, or different regions will use, this campaign and flex it in different ways against the particular target that they need to get drinkers for. So I think, you know, they may have a teen aspect of this particular message that we haven't yet seen in various gaming or digital. I noticed there's a gaming scene in there in the 90-second ad, as well as a political scene, as well as it gives countries the ability to flex into different target audiences, which will help with, because different regions will have different needs as well.
I hadn't noticed, but apparently Pepsi had a real focus on advertising in 2019 and invested a lot of money.
I read that, yeah.
Yeah, and in 2020 now they're kind of going, okay, we're going to retrench a little bit, if that is the right word, and they're going to focus on things like data collection. Do you think Coke is behind the times then? That maybe Pepsi, having seen the power of political advertising targets, kind of micro messages at micro audiences, maybe that's where Pepsi are going versus Coke, who, as we've been discussing, tend to go one message, one audience.
So I introduced this by saying that I haven't had a Pepsi in 15 years. I'm highly biased and I'm not very complimentary about their advertising when it's compared to Coke. So that comes with that caveat. I hadn't noticed they'd spent a vast amount, but that might be a global spend.
Yeah, yeah.
I assume they've spent a vast amount in the US, where they're a much bigger brand, and Russia, certain parts of Eastern Europe, parts of Asia as well, where they're bigger than they are in the UK. So I think Pepsi in the UK is a very different animal to elsewhere around the world, so we might not have noticed it. Coke also has data coming out of its ears. I mean, don't think that just because they're doing theme and social causes and purpose and big sports events that they don't have data. They're swimming in it and they're using it. I mean, they'll be using it for all sorts of new adventures, like buying Costa, for instance. Who goes in there? Why? What brands do they best sell in there? Who can they market to? It's their first big retail space they've had for a while. So that'll be quite interesting, and data will be at the heart of how they evolve that.
We can no longer avoid the high fat, sugar and salt issue, and Coca-Cola is right in the crosshairs of that one. Do you see them preparing for a future without high sugar products being available?
I think the two big issues for Coke, and necessarily they have to enter into the realm of talking about it, and they could shy away from it and they could be non-controversial, is sugar and fat, and the other one is plastics. They are two massive issues for a company that large. I mean, to give it some perspective, Coca-Cola has more lorries and vehicles than USB and FedEx combined. If you think about that, it's a vast, vast company. And if it were a country, it would have the same GDP as Costa Rica. As a brand, as a company that has sugar in their drinks or uses plastic, they're going to be responsible for quite a large proportion of what happens on the downsides of that debate. So they have to enter into it, and they have to enter into it with good intent and purpose and goals. And I think they've always done that.
Not surprisingly then, Guy and I got chatting about Coke's advertising history. Did you know they first started advertising on television in 1950? That's 70 years ago.
Amazing.
On Thanksgiving evening, it was one of those variety shows.
Wouldn't this be a good time for you and your guests to have Coca-Cola too?
Yes, and Coca-Cola is so delicious, so refreshing, so tempting to any guest when you bring out those familiar bottles, with tiny beads of moisture running down their frosty sides.
Talking about togetherness, back in 1950, the theme was hospitality. Mm. And of course, your Coke would mark the perfect host or hostess. And the perfect way to have a great evening was to add Coke to your Thanksgiving evenings. So they've got over 70 years of ads from all over the world, and not just Coca-Cola, of course, because they diversified into loads of other products. Mm. So I thought the obvious question, Guy, was, Guy, do you have a favourite ad?
Everyone's favourite is the 1971 Teach the World to Sing. It's so iconic. It's beautifully presented, and it's pure. And it's ungimmicky. It's not fake or artificial. It just feels very beautiful. It starts very softly and finishes as this chorus of people coming together.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves.
McCann's plan to shoot it on the White Cliffs of Dover. The weather was so bad, so they had to go further south in Europe. So overnight, they flew down to Italy, and they got the cast together at local embassies because they were the only diverse cast they could get last minute, and they got them standing around all day singing one song. So it looks like it's incredibly professional, but I know from the stories, and I met the copywriter.
Wow!
When we took that campaign whilst I was there onto mobile and vending machines. I think it's a Cannes case study. But we got the original writer involved in how we'd put it onto mobile and how we'd make it interactive, which it just blew his mind because he was in his 80s at the time.
Yes.
But a lovely, lovely man. It wasn't the guy from Mad Men.
Sticking with that one, you just alluded to Mad Men. I had missed that. So can you tell us the Mad Men story? Very quickly, in the final episode of Mad Men, that ad appears.
They allude to this ad as though, I can't remember the guy's name.
John Hamm, the actor.
John Hamm, has written this in this moment of serenity and calm after all the madness of the previous eight seasons. So he's essentially gone back to his roots, and he's the great ad man. And in American folklore history, that ad is one of their most famous and one of their most loved of all time. I think it tops all the polls of what's the greatest ad in the world. And so for him, the great madman to have written the greatest ad of all time. It was the wonderful way in which that season finished and the whole series finished. But they approached us at Coke. I was still on the Coke team in Atlanta at the time, and it was a huge risk that had to go right the way through to the CMO.
Really? Why was it a risk?
Because they didn't tell us how they were going to use it, and they didn't want to tell us because it was such a secret for them.
Right.
And we just had to go with it, and that was quite a risk. That's not shying away from controversy. And we all sat there. I do remember sitting there thinking, "What on earth are they going to do with this? It could be terrible." But it wasn't. It was a bit of a homage.
I didn't realise that the previous decade had had a great song as well, which I've only just discovered. The song was called "Things Go Better with Coca-Cola," and it's saying it now because I can't get it out of my head. I hadn't realised, Guy. I mean, I know you weren't there then, but you were in charge of content, so this was part of your repertoire, that the artists that Coca-Cola persuaded to record that song literally is a who's who of the music industry in the 1960s. Just a few that I found: Marvin Gaye, The Supremes, Tom Jones, Petula Clark, Gladys Knight, all recorded that song. I mean, amazing.
I pour some Coke and rattle the ice. Things go better when you treat them nice. Things go better when Coca-Cola.
And that was the first era that Pepsi started throwing their money at big stars.
Right,
because Coke's always been about themes and issues.
I don't know whether I'm leaping to a conclusion, but those artists I all associate with black music, even though they're not all black themselves, but they were all soulful singers. So I wonder if that was, again, either accidentally or on purpose, a seam that they were mining, the kind of soulfulness of Coca-Cola at the time. But I mean, yeah, great.
The 60s were a huge civil rights era.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And Coke was at the forefront of that in marketing terms. They were the first advertiser to integrate in one execution on a out-of-home poster in the US a black kid with two white kids drinking a Coke on a bench.
Wow.
And they were vandalized in the South in America when they were put up, and there you can read letters in their archives from people both incredibly rude from the Ku Klux Klan attacking Coke for this stance, which today looks innocuous. In fact, you need to know the history of what happens to know the symbolism of that poster, because you glance up at it today and it would mean, oh, there's just some
kid. We would just take you for granted.
Kids having a Coke.
Yeah.
What's so great about that? But it was, I mean, again, that's Coke throwing themselves into a social issue where it matters and being at the forefront of it, because they're a huge company employing so many of America's black South.
Things go better with Coca-Cola. Things go better. Things go better with Coca-Cola.
Gladys Knight and the Pips with that heavy beat, Coke after Coke.
Former Coca-Cola Global Content Excellence Director Guy Duncan on the illustrious history of Coke advertising. You can tell I was geeking out on all of that. And I did disappear down a YouTube rabbit hole watching so many of Coke's ads from all over the world.
Down memory lane.
Not just in the UK. And I think that's my other comment about the new ad. To be honest, having spent an hour or so watching old Coke ads, not that old, in fact, some of them, it wasn't the best, the one that they've just done. There's many other great ones. Polar Bears. I'd forgotten about the Polar Bears ad. I made you watch that last night, as well. But so many others, some great songs and stuff. But anyway, it's an interesting new direction. We will see how it works. And on a more somber note, the other thing we wanted to talk about in this episode was the whole Caroline Flack thing. Because from an advertising point of view, there is a backlash against those titles that have been covering her unfortunate experiences. And as you saw, some people are saying that brands should be boycotting those titles. I wondered what you guys thought about this. I mean, we've talked about boycotts in the past, but this one in particularly seems to have ignited public interest, I think.
Brands, we have to start taking some responsibility for what's happening in the world around us. And one way to do that is to not essentially fund media that are doing damage. And I think that's really the case in this instance. She was getting bullied by the media, and it ended in an absolutely devastating consequences. The tricky thing, I think, is that we can say, oh, it's the tabloid media that are bullying her. And obviously this is a much bigger topic, but it's not just the tabloid media that bully people. It's like, if you look at all of the, I'll call them generically women's magazines, you know, like the Heats, etc., with their, I don't know if they still do it, but like the circle of shame, if you dare to have like some cellulite on your arm, it will get blown up in high exposure and published in the magazine. I mean, that's bullying too. And so I think that there's a, and you know, you're being bullied all the time in terms of how you need to look and what you need to do and what you need to say. So I think it is a, it's a much bigger issue in terms of what types of worldviews the media perpetuates, which advertising obviously plays a part in. But in this instance, I think certainly when it comes to the type of coverage that is having such devastating consequences, advertisers should think again about where they put their money. I wonder though, you know, we have new guidance around what we can say and do in advertising around gender. I wonder if soon there will be more guidance around, more broadly, the game we should be playing in advertising around things like the climate, things like where your media can go. I don't know, it feels like, obviously don't want to be too prescriptive because we're operating in a business world, but yeah, I wonder if guidelines around advertising will or should keep on evolving to start again encouraging advertisers to be the change they want to see in the world.
Well, continuing our theme of repositionings after Coca-Cola, we now turn to banking. And you may have seen in the press that the RBS Group is rebranding and repositioning, and the RBS name is largely disappearing, and in its place, not a new name, a name that I think most of us are already familiar with, and my bank as well, declaring my interest. It will become known as the NatWest Group, and our resident financial services expert is Karen. So I wondered what you thought about this. Is it an inevitable thing, really, that they would lose RBS? Cause
don't ask me too hard questions.
But you're our financial expert, Karen.
I don't know if I can live up to that lofty title. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a critical time for all financial institutions in terms of how they still play a role and are still relevant to modern consumers, particularly with the neobanks, as we call them, the kind of challengers, the Monzos, the Starlings, etc. How successful they're doing from a business point of view is a different question, but they have certainly resonated with people from a brand point of view. And I guess that's part of what RBS are trying to do. They've described it as trying to bury a toxic history, obviously associated with bailouts, etc. And this comes with a bit of a reset for them in terms of their behavior and their direction with a new CEO. So they're kind of saying it's a matter of practicality, and I'd say that's probably true. What it will actually mean for consumers, probably not very much. RBS branches will remain RBS branches. But the CEO has set out a new strategy in terms of more ethical behavior. So climate positive targets, a lot of discussion around diversity and what that's going to mean for the bank in terms of their workforce. And again, this kind of idea of what their purpose is, that is quite a strong message, which I have to say, I haven't actually heard too much of from other banks. So I guess that's something that's quite interesting. I wouldn't say it's the most clear-cut set-out purpose yet, but it is all around, I guess, being a better business and helping people thrive with their money.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they're going to adopt a master brand strategy. And if so, will that master brand be advertised? Because, of course, we've seen NatWest ads, but it'd now be interesting to see NatWest Group, if there's going to be communications around that as well.
I think it's good timing as well. I think the column inches of late for these guys have been boardroom restructures, etc., which usually breed uncertainty, certainly for a financial institution like this. So good timing. And yeah, it's a fascinating time for banks. We talk a lot around the neobanks, as we call them, and what they're doing to shake up the existing establishments. But I was genuinely surprised to see that the level of profits that the group had reported. I guess it just poses the question of the neobanks. They are disruptive and maybe challenging the way the existing banks are doing things, but look who's still making the money.
Big bucks, I know.
Who's making the big bucks? Yeah, so RBS reported a 3.1 billion profit last year, which doubled on the year before, which is amazing because only in 2008, which is not that long ago, they were bailed out by the British government for 45 billion.
Make friends with Westminster. Westminster Bank is the friendliest you know.
Okay, it's time to talk about some new work. And first off the block, no pun intended, is not a TV ad, which I think you picked out, Paul. It's called Pint Block from Think. You're going to have to describe it as a result of that, aren't you, Paul? Here goes.
I think we all encourage each other to look at ads that aren't always TV related, and this is one. I've definitely got a personal kind of attraction towards really interesting art direction, often like illustration, thinking kind of Manamosa crisps a couple of years ago, which was stunning. So this is not just interesting art direction, this is a campaign called Pint Block. So as you said, so it's about encouraging friends to, so less kind of targeting one-on-one, targeting the friends that are with people out drinking who have keys in their pocket to block, so pint block them. And they've got different executions visually, so they're very interesting illustration style, very colourful. One's like a Mexican wave where you spill the pint, for example, accidentally on purpose. And lots of different executions. I think there is some social videos, I suppose you'd call it, not really ads. But they're encouraging, like, almost like gamifying it. I think that's how I would describe it. Kind of gamifying, blocking your mate as if you're playing a sport to not drink and drive.
Yeah, it's almost setting challenges, isn't it?
It is.
Illustrating them.
And it's interesting, as I said, that they're usually it's about kind of targeting, like, the person who is driving, whereas actually this is kind of, there's obviously an insight in that actually the friends play a key role in saying, hey, come on, you got your keys, let's have no more. Or,
well, I think actually what's really interesting, I think you're completely right, it is born out of a really strong insight, which I think makes this advertising even more powerful. And this really shocked me. There's government research that shows that only 45% of young men believe it's important to intervene.
A mate doesn't let a mate drink drive.
Another campaign that took our eye the past week or so is for the British Heart Foundation. And tell us about it, because I think there's a beautiful insight there. There, isn't it? It's called Swear Jar. There's the clue.
Yeah, it's a really, really lovely execution. So it's a new ad from British Heart Foundation. We know that a big challenge from some of the work we've done with them in the past, a big challenge for British Heart Foundation is making sure that people know it's about more than just heart disease. It's about everything that comes with circulatory issues. And this ad is really lovely. It's a young boy who seems to be doing everything in his power to get his family to swear by doing some very irritating things like switching the tap on while his mum's in the shower. And he later visits a grandfather who is suffering with vascular dementia. He doesn't remember the little boy's name. And eventually it transpires that what he's trying to do is get his family to swear so that he can get them to put money in his swear jar. And the swear jar is actually labelled Granddad's Cure Jar.
The boy that's in it, is it the same boy from there? You know, the one that broke the fourth wall and he was talking about his life and then he looked familiar. He takes his jumper off and he's obviously had heart surgery. It makes sense, I suppose, but it looks very similar, yeah.
Forge!
You said the S word!
No, I didn't.
You said the S word!
I'd do anything to help find a cure for vascular dementia. You can help by giving £3 to the British Heart Foundation.
So, continuing the theme around dementia and Alzheimer's and things like that, the final ad puzzled us a bit. It's for a brand I hadn't heard of. It's called Teva, produced by VCCP Kin. So what's it all about, Paul?
I think you summed it up nicely there. We're talking about it today because it's lovely but confusing, and let's try and work it out. So it's from Teva, which is randomly, I didn't think I'd ever see Teva back in my life, but my last agency, they were quite a big client. They are a Israeli-based pharmaceutical company, pretty big, although we've never really heard of them, but that's probably the way with, you might have heard of their products but not necessarily the brand. And this is it's a lovely kind of story. Effectively, I try and do my best job. It is an old gentleman who is going in to do hair and makeup almost for a what looks like a sort of stage production. They're all young in the production and he's very old and they're very confused. And then as the story plays out, you can see that he is a skilled kind of hair and makeup artist because his wife has been suffering with we don't know what, but unable to do it herself. And over the years, I suppose he's trained himself to support his wife and become a very helpful husband and very good at hair and makeup. And it kind of plays out very nicely. It's the music's quite cute, but yeah, lovely, and you feel emotionally connected. And it's obviously doing a nice kind of message for carers, but we're quite confused. I think I don't know what the call to action is or what we're needing to do.
I thought it was a beautiful ad, and you know, in the GCSE of advertising that we are always studying, that emotional engagement thing was absolutely there. And so I think Teva are an amazing organization. I just don't know who you are and what you do. But my assumption was that the wife, I assume it's wife in the ad, is suffering from something like Parkinson's or possibly a dementia. And the assumption I made was that Teva produce drugs for Parkinson's or dementia or something like that. But I also got a thing about the fact that the old guy in the young person's world, that was quite stark as well. And I also took a thing about ageism out of it, because that sequence was quite interesting where he's being taught how to do hair and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And also even a sense of isolation for him, or loneliness as being, well, obviously it later emerges that he's a carer. And they do have a line in the advertising that says that everyday carers go to extraordinary lengths to look after the ones they love. I just still don't see I just don't see what the why Teva's telling me about it.
Well, sadly, that's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.